It is 5:20, and this is the KDLL Evening News for Friday, January 2nd, on 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. Filling in for Ashlyn O'Hara, I'm Jake Dye. Thanks for tuning in. Coming up, Alaska state health officials continue to recommend the hepatitis B vaccine for all newborns. But first, Alaska will get $272 million from the federal government next year to upgrade its rural health systems, officials said Monday. The money comes from the Rural Health Transformation Program, a new five-year fund meant to allow rural areas to tailor health care systems to their specific needs. At a news conference in Anchorage, U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan said the program has the potential to reshape Alaska's healthcare system in a way that benefits everybody.
The federal government is providing the funding that we can design a program with that actually meets and reflects our unique challenges.
Sullivan spoke alongside Governor Mike Dunleavy, U.S. Representative Nick Begich, and Alaska Department of Health Commissioner Heidi Hedberg. Every U.S. state will receive funding next year through the Transformation Fund, but Alaska is getting, by far, the most per person. If it gets a similar amount in the remaining 4 years of the program, it will receive almost $1.4 billion total. Sullivan said the money will be used to strengthen rural clinics, stabilize healthcare workforces, and help keep care closer to home, reducing the need for costly and disruptive travel.
It's certainly the biggest investment from the federal government to Alaska's healthcare system in our state's history.
The $50 billion Rural Health Transformation Program was authorized as part of the Republican-backed One Big Beautiful Bill, which also included new requirements for Medicaid access. The money comes after the state lost millions in public health funding and as federal subsidies for the Affordable Care Act are set to end. Phil Hofstetter is CEO of Petersburg Medical Center in Southeast Alaska. He said in an interview that the new funding could have huge impacts on much-needed changes to the state's healthcare system, as long as regulations and bureaucracy don't get in the way.
In rural areas, we know how to use those funds. We know what challenges arise in our locations, and those might be different in different locations. So I feel like if we're not allowed to use those funds specifically to meet the needs of our communities, that could be a potential failure point.
But Hofstetter says he is cautiously optimistic about the transformation program. Alaska Department of Health Commissioner Heidi Hedberg said the state will share more details in coming weeks about how hospitals, community-based organizations, and federally qualified health centers can access the funds. More than 300 Alaskans died last year of overdose, most of them involving opioids. It's a tragic consequence of the state's opioid crisis, and the struggles of most of those with addiction remain hidden. Alaska Public Media health reporter Rachel Cassandra talked to one man whose experience with addiction and recovery mirrors that of so many others in the state.
Come on, chickens. Here you go. There's corn in this one.
Dee is on his land in Nanelchik on the Kenai Peninsula.
We're here feeding the chickens. And the horse. The horse.
We're just using Dee's first initial to protect his privacy.
Okay, ladies.
Dee doesn't take even the simple things like household chores for granted. He's a fisherman, an artist, and he's been in recovery for more than a year. But for more than a decade, Dee struggled with an active opioid addiction. It all started when he fell off a ladder and got injured.
Before 2012, I didn't know what dope sick was. I drank beer and smoked pot like the good Lord intended. And when I got hurt, I started taking those pills.
He says his doctor put him on 80 milligrams of OxyContin a day to manage the pain, a high dose.
I thought that I wasn't addicted to them until I didn't have them no more.
When Dee's doctor wouldn't prescribe more pain pills, he went through withdrawal, sometimes called being dope sick.
It's like having the flu, the worst part of having the flu, you know, but it don't go away. I've never had the flu that lasted over 24 hours, but dope sick just keeps going on and on and on and on.
Dee isn't alone. His story follows a common pattern in Alaska and the rest of the U.S. The state has now lost about 2,000 Alaskans to drug overdoses in the past decade, many of them from opioids. Like Dee, many became dependent on opioids after they were prescribed them following an injury. Then, when their prescriptions ran out, many turned to heroin and, more recently, fentanyl. Now, addiction medicine experts say medications like methadone and buprenorphine can treat addiction long-term and prevent overdoses before they happen. Dee says when he couldn't get another opioid prescription from his doctor, he found heroin, and it took over his life.
Virtually every dime I was making, I was just spending on heroin. But if you're spending that much money on one thing, and you can't do nothing else, it's not good for your relationship, believe that. And my woman put up with it for 10 years.
He says the damage to his relationship with his partner eventually pushed him to get treatment. He'd tried an oral medication for opioid use disorder, but he didn't stick with the treatment. But about a year ago, he decided to try buprenorphine injections, which last for a month. That's been a game changer for him because it's reduced his cravings and need for street opioids. Dr. Sarah Spencer is his provider and an addiction medicine specialist working on the Kenai Peninsula. She says buprenorphine is the most widely used medication for opioid use disorder, and she says she's seen it transform the lives of her patients.
One of the things people say that they like the most about the medication is that they just wake up feeling normal every day. Like, they don't wake up feeling like they're sick and in withdrawal.
And she says that means they can spend their time on other things, not just finding and using opioids. Dee says that's been true for him for the year he's been in recovery.
Yeah, this saved my relationship, definitely. It saved my life, period. Yeah, I still have a relapse now and again, but for the most part, I don't even think about it.
Spencer says returning to opioid use like Dee describes is common and doesn't mean the treatment is a failure. She says the medication both reduces cravings for illicit opioids and makes using them less pleasurable. Medication also dramatically reduces people's risk of dying of overdose. Dee says he's grateful that he has survived his disorder so far.
I can see how you could die really easy. I'm so sick of people dying. It's not even funny. I look at my Facebook and half the people are dead. You know, all from fentanyl. And, I don't want to do that to my kids or my woman. You know. So that's why I'm trying. Yeah. That's why I'm trying.
He says now he's grateful he doesn't have to waste his life trying to find opioids. And he encourages more people who have a problem with opioids to seek out help. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
And finally, Alaska state health officials continue to recommend the hepatitis B vaccine for all newborns, despite a recent controversial change in federal guidance. State Epidemiology Chief Dr. Joe McLaughlin says the vaccine is especially important in Alaska, which has struggled with high rates of chronic hepatitis B.
This universal birth dosing helps to ensure every baby receives protection, regardless of their location, their access to care, or any follow-up challenges that they might have. This approach has definitely helped reduce disparities in hepatitis B outcomes across Alaska for decades.
Public health experts credit the vaccine with dramatically lowering the risk of developing chronic hepatitis B, serious liver diseases, and liver cancer. For over three decades, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommended that all babies across the country get the vaccine at birth. Then, this December, the CDC narrowed its guidance, recommending the vaccine only for infants born to women who test positive for the virus or whose status is unknown. The guidance says women who test negative should consult with a healthcare provider before vaccinating their newborn. But McLaughlin emphasizes that the CDC also acknowledged that each state has to consider its own hepatitis B rates and risk factors.
So Alaska, where the rates are nearly three times the national average, clearly falls into a higher risk category as a state in general. And our data support continuing universal birth dose vaccination to protect infants in Alaska.
Hepatitis B is a virus spread through bodily fluids and from mother to baby during childbirth. Historically, Alaska has had high rates of hepatitis B, especially among Alaska Native people. In the 1970s, widespread infection led to rates of liver cancer in Alaska Native children. McLaughlin says screening and vaccinations have helped reduce rates of hepatitis B in the state. Still, it is present. Alaska Chief Medical Officer Dr. Robert Lawrence says about 100 Alaskans are newly diagnosed with chronic hepatitis B every year. He says the virus can spread in Alaska partly through close community ties.
When there is cross between households and between families, if one person has hepatitis B, that could be transmitted throughout an entire community, even to members who are not of that same household.
health insurers have said they will continue to cover the hepatitis B vaccine. That's all for tonight's KDLL Evening News. We had help from Hannah Floor and Rachel Cassandra in Anchorage. You can re-listen to this newscast and find our other stories online at kdll.org. I'm Jake Dye. Have a great night.
PVLs, and I'm 10 years old, and I'm here today to talk to you about why KDLL is so important to our community. Like, for example, Science Friday is super important to me because it helps me understand the world around me, and I'm sure that it's the same for a lot of people too, and this is one of the many reasons you should support or donate to KDLL.
Thanks, Iris. If you appreciate and value public broadcasting on the Kenai Peninsula, donate now at kdll.org.